Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the day 319, 2013, and we won't be here next week. Because you're going to be in Costa Rica.
Yes, doing research.
Okay.
This is the cat's in the cradle that I when I hear that song with my kids, I get kind of choked up. I guess everybody does, right? So my son is getting older. He's 17 now. Each year for the last maybe 5 or 6 years, we've tried to get away from my birthday just because.
Tomorrow's your birthday.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Are you taking off tomorrow?
No.
Oh.
For the most part, everybody. I'm going to get a lot of Facebook birthdays and all that good stuff and calls, and that's very nice. But it's a Wednesday, so I work. But I try to take off a few days, to go with my son somewhere. We went sailing last year for the weekend. Year before that, went to New Orleans. Year before that, went to London. So we try to spend a little time together on my birthday. We look forward to it every year.
Yeah, and sometime in the future, he'll just tell you to.
Yeah, unless I continue to pay.
Well, yeah, I guess that's a benefit.
Right, exactly. Now, I want to tell you something. I want everybody to know this. The man, the myth, the legend is back. John C. Dvorak, I'll give you a little tease here. John C. Dvorak is wiping it. He's cleaning up on the stock charts there in terms of his stock picks.
Huh.
Yep. I'm sure you check that quite often.
No, I only check it once in a while.
Yep. Well, you're doing pretty good. You got some serious winners in there. I mean, not 50, 60, 70%, but I mean, consistent greenies.
Yeah.
Look good.
Yeah, but the one I really want to hit on is, I do know, is not quite doing what it should be doing.
Well, you still have time. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, it's just sitting there. You never know.
Yep. So, yeah, very impressive. Now, I'm going to have to obviously... I don't want to be showing up, right? I don't want to be, you know, sitting kind of here. I got some nice ones on there too, but nothing it's consistent. So I'm going to have to come up with a big one tonight to see if I can kind of steamroll ahead.
Okay.
A little tease there. Now, there's a new website coming, by the way. One of our listeners has put together a website for DH Unplugged because ours is rather plain.
It's very plain. It's not rather plain.
Yeah. So a listener put something together. We didn't want anything very fancy. We don't want a lot of moving parts and all sorts of flash going on there and all that.
I picked that up.
No, it's okay. So,
hey, by the way, if it's for me, tell him I'm not there.
Oh, okay. Okay, hang on. No, DeVore's not here. No. Okay. So anyway, we'll have that, I think, next week or so, and we'll tell you who built it for us and tell you all about it. Much improved. Very good looking.
Good. All right. I look forward to that. Everyone will look forward to that.
Yep. I want to tell you, things are finally getting interesting in the market, aren't they?
A little bit. Could be better.
It could be better. I'm not talking about it being up or down, but at least we're getting some reality setting in. This whole Cyprus thing. You've been following the Cyprus
thing? Oh, the Cyprus thing, yeah. You know, when you go to a bank at Cyprus, the teller pulls a gun on you.
Ah. Yeah, we need that bell or that. You need something there. That's assuming you can get in. They've been closed.
Yeah.
They shut down over the weekend. They came up. Now, let me catch everybody up a little bit. We could talk about this. So, in Cyprus, not even a small country. I don't even know what it is. Like an offshoot of Greece. It's just a little thing out there.
It's
right?
An island.
Yeah, it was small.
Supposedly, it's about the size of Delaware or Connecticut. Somebody said Connecticut. I don't know if it's that big, but it might
very
be.
Very small. Very small.
Overrun
with Russians. The banking system is 8 times the size of the GDP. It's enormous, okay? The biggest thing they have going on there is the banking system. It's kind of like Luxembourg in a way, you know, or some of those places.
Yeah, it's a place where people put their money.
Yep. So there's a lot of Russian, as they say, the Russian oligarch money, okay? It's on the brink of failure. Now, how is that? I guess they did too many loans. They're not running efficiently. They're basically about to be, if not on the brink of failure and bankruptcy. So the EU says, well, we're not going to let anybody fail, right? So we're going to bail you out. Over the weekend, they come up with a plan. And this is by far the bonehead plan of the year or maybe the decade.
Yeah, it's a good one.
They come up with the plan that, yep, we're going to bail you out. You need how much? You need about $15 billion. Not that much in the big scheme of bailouts, right? But they need about $15 billion. So we're going to give you about maybe 10 And what we want you to do is for the other five, maybe three or five, we want you to hit the depositors in the bank. And we want you to hit the for the insured deposits that are under 100,000 euro, about a 7% hit. And for those over that, about a 9% hit. So, in other words, the banks are closed over the weekend. You open up your bank account that has 100,000 euros in it, and now it's worth 93. They call it a tax to make it sound like a little bit better, or a kind of a revival or stability fee, if you will. Essentially, it's they're taking your money.
Yeah, it's kind of a wealth tax, but it's not really. It's a money grab, and I don't know if you want to do this with all that Russian money in there.
Right.
I expect to see a few EU people washed up on shore, dead.
Yeah, or hanging in front of a bank.
Something like that. It'll be noteworthy.
No eyes plucked out.
Something. Who knows this?
So. Here's what's interesting about this, and here's where the problem is. Well, what's the big deal? I mean, first of all, it's only a $13 or $15 billion deal, which these days is small. And on top of it, it's a small little country. They don't have any kind of real economy that anybody cares about in terms of the world. And why are our stocks and everybody getting all up in arms about this? Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, this is a really, really bad idea that they came up with, first of all, to hit the insured deposit holders, which then basically breaks the covenants and promises of, hey, your money's safe here.
Right.
It's like, that's bad.
It actually seems illegal, but go on.
Yeah. The second thing is that if the EU and the brainiacs over there do something like this and they come up with this kind of plan, is this kind of setting the precedent for maybe the next time a bank or countries' banks start failing? And what happens if it's Italy or Spain, Portugal, Greece? Are they going to require taking money out of the depositors? And that's now all of a sudden, I guess I pose the question to you, John. You have money in – well, we know you have money stashed all around the world. But if you had money in an Italian bank or in a Greek bank, what would you be doing right now?
I'd be arranging to move it someplace else.
Right.
Probably Switzerland.
Yeah, Switzerland, wherever it may be.
Yeah.
So this is a really – this is kind of a recipe for a bank run. And the parliament tonight in Cyprus, they postponed the vote. They had the vote. They postponed the vote. They had a vote and they knocked it down. They're not agreeing to the bailout. It's just not happening. Well, that wasn't good, because now what? They don't get a bailout, they're going to go under, right? They may have to leave the euro, which is a whole other issue. So there's no good situation here. The one thing that the EU did, of course, that they backpedaled. They do that brilliantly, by the way. They come up with a plan. We didn't really mean that, So that's you're right. We shouldn't tax under the 100,000, under the insured limit. So what we're gonna do is we'll hit the above, because we have to kind of for about 20% to 30%. So now there's a lot of Russian money there, as you said. For whatever reason. And I'm thinking that and by the way, there's other people, like people, for example, who are in the military from various countries that have money in those banks that live there. And maybe the Cyprus banks in other countries, if there's a bank over in another country, they have to be hit too, right? So you may have someone in Greece who has money in a Cyprus bank that happens to be in Greece. So this is a really big problem. It's pretty ugly.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised that the stock market kind of stalled over on this, because it seems to me that the first thing, one of the effects will be people pushing their money over to us.
Yeah, I agree.
Which should be boosting pretty much everything.
Well, I mean, it definitely would be pushing the dollar up. The dollar has been going up. The dollar is close to 83 now, the highest it's been in. This is the Dixie, we call it, the basket. It's a comparison between the yen and the euro and a few other.
Oh, I don't know anything about this.
Oh, about the dollar?
I mean, the Dixie.
Well, we call it the Dixie, DXY.
Oh,
so
okay.
The Dixie is which is good for America too. Dixie, the old land of Dixie.
Yeah.
But it's a basket of money. So it's not just against the yen or just against the pound. It's a basket that is the value. So we look at the U.S. dollar in comparison to the worldwide currencies, and it is at 83. It was at 78 not too long ago. So it's doing the reverse of what the yen's doing. There's a lot of repatriation coming here, money coming from offshore. I mean, why would you hold your money in Japanese banks if you're going to lose it?
Yeah.
You know, move it over here. Now the Cyprus situation, maybe Europe. So there is, the dollar is moving up. And one of the reasons that we're seeing a lot of commodities get hurt, although not gold too badly and not oil by any means, is because the dollar is starting to move. This is going to be very bad for exporters.
Yeah, that for them. Yeah. Well, actually, for us in some way.
For ours, yeah. I mean, for Caterpillar and for the company, the international companies, the companies that have money that they earn overseas is going to be a real problem because it's going to be worth a lot less.
So I'm looking at the euro. It's $1.28 now, which is now it's getting down to. Of course, it was a couple of years ago when I was hoping it was going to hit 125. I think it will now this year for sure. And the pound is nice. It's at $1.50, which is pretty much.
What was the high of the pound? It was like 2, right, at one time?
Almost. I don't know if it was ever hit 2. It might have for a short time.
Close.
But it was up there in the $1.80, $1.90. It was way up there. I mean, generally speaking, if you're a traveler, and this is the only thing I care about apparently, is that you want the pound to be $1.50 right on the money because that makes it very easy to figure out what you're paying for. You don't have to bring out a calculator.
And the
euro should be at least – it should be 1-to-1, but that's not going to happen anytime soon.
So it has nothing to do with the value of money. It's more about the ease of calculation.
Exactly.
Oh, all right. So that makes sense. No, I understand. That's why they try to peg it to that point. Ah, I got you. Now, what about the fact that going to London – I don't know if you've traveled from here to London. You have to pay some ridiculous amount of money for, I think it's like close to $700 for tax. Are you aware of this?
No. What?
There's a
tax to go to London now?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just fly to Amsterdam and then sneak in on the back door?
Yeah, you can do that. But if you go direct from, I guess, all cities in the United States to London, tacked onto your plane ticket is like a $700 fee.
I didn't know that. When did this happen?
Yeah. This is a while now.
I haven't been in London for a while.
Avoid
either.
It at all costs.
So let's see. Trip to – what's it called? What kind of a tax is it?
I would call it
– excise tax?
I guess. Airline tax to London.
Airline tax to London.
Look up something like that.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything.
No,
I'll look into it. Then you wouldn't go to London. You wouldn't go to Heathrow. You'd go to Paris. It's a good place to land. A nice. You can get there. You can get down to Paris now on the train or one of the subways or something. I remember. And but the Amsterdam's a real winner because that's kind of in the middle of Europe and it's always a cheap flight.
And you can always just stop by and have a little coffee in the coffee shops.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, go to the smart shop.
It seems to be discouraged.
Ah, discouraged. So many things are. All right, let me tell you some other things that are going on here. Big records this year. We saw the Dow Jones hit the all-time record. S&P get really close. And the biggest one, that the S&P was down 3 days in a row the first time this year.
Hmm.
Can you imagine that? The first time this year, 3 months. So probably all in a huff. Russia got smoked pretty good. And we saw that Greece was down 4.5%, and that really happened after the Cyprus vote, the futures. We saw that Sunday night overnight, there was just a big sell-off. The NASDAQ futures were down about 40, 42. The S&P futures were down 22. By midday, they were about even. Buying the dip and buyers, they don't care about the news. They don't care what's going on. They just buy it. So that happened. Then it shot back down towards the end of the day. And today, we had a similar kind of situation, not as significant, but they tried to push the market up, and then it just languished for the rest of the day. So VIX is up about 30% in the last 2 days. Yen is at was as low as 93.75, and just keeps on. Every time it hits down, they just sell the crap out of it. So it's kind of amazing. Here's my theory on that, by the way. You want to hear my theory?
Yeah.
So the yen started moving lower. I'll say really start moving in November, December. I mean, not just like kind of creeping. I mean, moving. And so they're selling the yen off, right? And the government is promoting this, even though they say they're not. Hedge funds, investors, banks, they're selling the yen. Obviously, it's good for the country, and they're buying other assets. Well, we see the dollar go up, of course. Well, I think what's happening here in a way also is, well, why not buy U.S. stocks? We're the best house in a bad neighborhood. And if you have to be in stocks, do that. Sell the yen, buy stocks. And what's been interesting, it's been they're also getting the appreciation of the dollar as they do this.
Oh, so not only right, right. It's a double whammy.
Double.
Yeah.
So this is pretty good. So this is kind of, I think, the little trend that's going on, and that's what's holding up our markets, because the yen, as the green flag is being waved by the Japanese government that, hey, sell the crap out of this thing. We don't care. It's good for us. So as they're doing that, I think that there's a lot of investors taking that and saying, hey, you know what? All these, you know, maybe dips in the markets and maybe the opportunity to put money here, that's what's really holding things up. The question is going to be, when the markets drop and there needs to be a kind of a reversal and you want to pull the money out and you're going to buy the yen, just pay back the – the short, if you will, or the sale that you did. I mean, the yen could really turn around. That's what happened on Sunday night. That's why the yen was down.
Oh, interesting.
And then when the market started coming up, I mean, maybe there was a lot more, you know, selling going on.
I think this theory, I think this is a very adequate theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you'd do. I mean, you're not going to be selling the yen and then buying potato chips.
Definitely not. Or sushi. All right, what else we got? Tomorrow, big day tomorrow. There's a big change. It was for the past several many months that we'd see that the Fed announcement, they meet for a couple of days and they announce the rates, you know, whether they're going to increase rates, decrease rates, keep the quantitative easing going. Bernanke, they would put out the numbers at about, I think, I want to say 12-ish. And then at 2 o'clock, Bernanke would come on and discuss it and then take questions. And, you know, this is something very new to the Fed. They're trying to be open, transparent, and communicate.
Yeah. Yeah,
but last week they decided too much time in between. It's not good. People could misconstrue the information.
That's actually true. I think they're right. So they're going to do a much later announcement, and then Bernanke is going to come out right afterwards. Why doesn't he just do the announcement? How about that for an idea?
Yeah, well, that would be smart.
Just skip it. Just do the announcement and take questions.
Right.
Yeah. Well, then you'd get to apparently now, I think it's at 1:50.
Yeah.
And then at 2 o'clock, it's 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Kill it. Kill the 10 minutes.
That 10 minutes could be too long also.
It could be.
It can be misconstrued. The market could drop like 10 points.
Yeah. So you want to just have him do the whole thing, which may be what this is leading up to, because he is a ham. He's boring as hell. I mean, this guy's not an interesting person. But he is a – he likes to be out there. He likes to be speaking. He likes to be in front of the public.
Yeah. Did he have a smile? Have you seen him smile ever? I don't recall.
Yeah. He smiles, but he has like he has very thick saliva, so when he smiles, there's the strings that, you know, you see.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm just telling you. You asked.
So he doesn't smile because somebody once upon a time said, you know, you got those saliva strings that are going on. You look like a violin.
It's an unpleasant thought. So
I'm a little bit sickened right now by that. But so the question is going to be, let's say he comes out tomorrow and he's, you know, does his old, hey, the economy is doing okay, but, and, you know, interest rates are down, but, housing market has recovered a bit, but, you know, the whole thing, we're going to continue what we're doing, we're going to really press on it. Will the dollar yen have any reaction?
Well, what do you think? I don't know. I think
what's stronger, I guess, at this point? You know, I mean, what has more power? Is it the Bank of Japan with their just outright incredible amount of passion towards dropping their and outwardly dropping the yen, or Bernanke, who, you know, he has to be careful with what he says, because if he says that the economy's stronger, well, that's good for the dollar.
Right. I don't think they want to move the dollar any more than it's moved.
Yeah.
Because it's going to, you know, caterpillars and these people are going to be suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to do what they can, I think, to lock it at these rates. It's not bad. I mean, 128 euro seems okay. It's not a complete scam ripoff. I'd rather see it lower, but the pound, I like the pound at $1.50.
Well, of course, any round number is good.
Yeah, it's easy.
We should even just do it that way. Just have it round numbers. That's it. It's either going to be $1.50, $2. That's it. It can't be like, you know, $1.57. Because you know what? You go shopping and you're so discombobulated after that. You can't even buy what you want to buy.
Yeah, you can bring out the little smartphone, you know. I get these little programs and you can make the calculation. It's amazing how you can be fooled into thinking you're getting a deal when you're not.
Oh, that happens all the time. We got some earnings out.
Yeah, what?
Adobe came out. Adobe actually came out.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, and then the CTO quit.
Yeah, I find this interesting. I find that Adobe, beat. Well, I guess we got to chalk it up to some of the product design. Don't forget, they were going to a different model recently.
I've written about that, and I think the subscription model may or may not already be paying off. It would be a little earlier than I expected, but
I agree.
It's a better model for them, I think, and I think they can do a lot with it if they don't screw it up somehow. I don't know how they could do that, but I'm beginning to take a liking to the Microsoft model too, because if you use it to the max, in other words, you get five machines.
And didn't they just do something like that will actually mail you a disk or have it downloaded so you can actually download it now, something different?
Yeah, there's something going on. But the main news was that students can now get, for $79, they can get all the Office suite, the entire Office suite for the next 4 years.
Wow.
Upgraded for 4 years, and they can use it on two machines. And most students usually have a machine at home with their parents, or they have a laptop. They usually have at least two machines.
Yeah, but there's only one problem with that.
So that makes it $10 a year.
Only one little bitty problem with that.
Yes.
Most students have Apples.
No, this includes you can have a mix and match.
Oh, you'd have for the Mac also. You can have Mac versions. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, you can have one Mac, one PC if you want.
Oh. Well, I
and that's not true anymore, by the way. You're living in the past, I might add.
Why?
It's not like it used to be. I mean, for example, my daughter goes to a school up in Oregon that has almost everybody is required to have a PC. And I think that's true. It's a lot of the schools now. The Mac guys dropped the ball on this.
Hmm. A friend of mine brought to me, he just got it in the mail, this Asus, it was the new Microsoft touchscreen Asus Windows 8 deal.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool. I mean, there's a lot of tiles going on, though. I mean, the stuff was flipping and flopping all over the screen.
I ran that, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but there was one, there's actually a couple of these, but this was a free one I think you can get at SourceForge, and it's called Classic UI or something like that. I'll have to get the name because I want to write about it too. I installed that immediately, and it's one of the recommended programs to kill the Windows 8 problem.
Yeah.
And so it boots to the desktop, and it's almost you really have to work. You have to work hard to get those tiles to show up.
And that's good because the other stuff is
yeah, no, it essentially
tiles.
Doesn't even want to look at those tiles. And I mean, why would it?
How can you concentrate?
They're idiotic.
There's stuff moving all over the place.
No, it's terrible. And but this piece of code, Classic UI or whatever it's called, I can't remember. But people can Google and figure it out. But it's great. I mean, it really makes the machine like a hot Windows 7 machine. But you could use some of those Windows 8 features if you want. But to be honest about it, I don't see any reason to use any of those tiled features. What does it do for you?
I mean,
is there any reason you'd want to use any of them? It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
It kind of, do you remember the days that everybody said, hey, keep your desktop clean, put stuff in folders, put it, hide it. And I mean, Apple has something where they do these folders and folders. You ever see people that have their desktops that are just absolutely, first of all, they have some kind of very annoying wallpaper on that would make anything difficult to see, right? And then they have just littered all
right,
over the screen.
Everything.
Everything.
They don't have anything organized at all. It's just on the screen somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, I have one machine that's like that.
I mean, and that's what this kind of is. But the even worse is that they're moving around on you. I mean, the only
a lot of them are wiggling. Yeah,
yeah, it's annoying. Anyway, he brought it over. It was kind of sweet. I mean, so how some of the stuff worked and all that. But you got to get used to that whole, typing and hand gesturing, because you got to move your move up and back, and that means take your hand off the keyboard.
Yeah, no, it's no good. Believe me, this going back to this classic style and using Windows 8 because it's fast because it's new. I wrote about that, and people always think these new operating systems, it's so much faster. Yes, because you haven't loaded it up with a bunch of garbage.
Right.
I mean, they all fast when you first get them. You could install your Windows XP, and it would be fast.
You would wonder why Microsoft still hasn't have an embedded uninstall program that will actually, or let me say it this way, a program that monitors all your installs and all the places that it puts junk, okay? And when you uninstall, it just wipes it all out instead of leaving remnants all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see what's so hard about that.
I don't know either. I mean, the whole migration problem with Windows has never been solved adequately, and it just seems to me not to be that hard to do, but they just don't want to do it.
I guess not. So what do you think about this Adobe, the chief technology officer, rumored or at least said to be in the news, going to Apple? I mean, is that going to be some kind of now – I mean, you know, the rivalry and the feud. Is there going to be some kind of crossover going on, do you think?
I have no idea. I think I know Kevin Lynch.
Oh. Why don't you call him? Ask him.
Well, I can guarantee he's not going to tell me. These guys never say anything. You'll find out eventually, they always say. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you, but not now.
Yeah. And on Microsoft, back to them, federal regulators, do you see this news item that they're investigating Microsoft's relationship with business partners that allegedly bribed foreign officials in return for software contracts? Now, I'll tell you something.
Doesn't surprise me.
Well, that doesn't only surprise you, but we know that in some areas, some countries, it is kind of part of the process.
Yeah, no, totally. And so, I don't know what you're supposed to do about it, but there's laws against it. If you're an American company, you can't take part in that game.
Yeah, well, then you lose the business, I assume.
Yeah.
Just if the assumption is, hey, you know, we'll introduce you to, you know, hey, you want the government to buy Microsoft and buy, you know, 10,000 seats? Okay, fine. You got to pay me a piece of the action.
Yeah.
And I guess that would be considered bribery rather than a commission for a salesperson. Why don't you just hire the guy and just pay him?
Well, you could. Well, then he still has to bribe somebody, which makes it worse.
Right.
You could. There's workarounds, obviously, to bribery that people use. But apparently some of these countries are so blatant and idiotic about it, they won't even deal with the workaround. They just want some cash right now in their wallet.
Right. On the just finishing up the subject of computers and technology, there seems like there's more and more players getting involved in this Dell deal.
I love this.
It's unbelievable. Now, BlackRock is throwing their hat in. They're thinking about buying and overbidding.
Yeah.
And Icon's involved. It's – first of all, the bidding war doesn't seem to really ignite the stock too much.
No, because it doesn't look serious yet, but it could happen. Bad sleeper of a stock to pick up. But
I mean, the worst comes to worst, you know, if they all fail, it's going to go back to, what, 7 or 8?
Well, no, the one deal is not going to fail. I mean, Dell's going to buy his company. He's part of the, you know, whoever that consortium is. It's not going to go back to 8. They're going to take it private one way or the other.
So your floor is, let's say, 13 then.
Yeah, I think it'll be 13 or something. And, or maybe higher if he has to, but these other guys jumping in are really screwing things up. It's going to be fun to watch.
Actually, screwing things up for him.
Yeah, and that's what I mean for him. He must be beside himself. He's got to be totally irked.
Right,
he saw it was the perfect time to do this. What's the big deal? Who's going to care?
Right. And now everybody's kind of jacking his price up and screwing him on the ownership.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, well.
He could actually lose the company. I think BlackRock bought it and he didn't have any part of the deal, he could actually be out.
Well,
that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah. Now, just I want to come back to a story that we, I think, talked about last week or the week before. This whole the dead pigs in the reservoir in China.
Yeah.
Now, I think
I
when
love
we talked
this
about
story.
It's like 3,000 dead pigs.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a film of them.
Now it's 9,000.
Yeah, I always thought it was 9 to begin with, but people keep saying it was 3.
How long does it seriously? I mean, how long does it take to unload 9,000
dead pigs?
Assuming they were dead at the time,
they may have been alive at the time. They may just pushed them in there. I don't know what the point of it is, unless they're. I mean, why would you put the pigs in there unless there was something wrong with them? They were contaminated.
Why would you just
burn them? You burn them or butcher them?
I don't know.
It seems to me that the Chinese love eating pig.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing is weird.
It is totally weird. I agree.
Yeah.
The pig. The pigs must be diseased. That's the only thing I can think of.
But still, why would you put them in water in a reservoir that could then possibly disease? I mean, and then create all sorts of problems because they just rot in there. Just burn them. I don't get it. Dig a hole. I mean, they already went to the trouble of loading them on trucks and all, and then schlepping them over to the. This place, and probably in the dark or some other time.
This is the Chinese. I have no idea what they were thinking. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But this is the kind of screwy crap that goes on over there.
Well, talking about things that happen that are really screwy. You know, so Google's offering this high-speed internet, right? You know, this unbelievable, you know, fiber optic, you know, 10,000, you know.
Yeah, 100 gigabits or something.
Whatever it is. You know, something ridiculous.
At least the 10. Latest, I think it's 10 gigabits.
Which is very fast, obviously. And it's only in select areas. Okay, the latest one is in a place called Olathe, Kansas. I think that's how you say it. Olathe.
Let's Kansas. Move there.
Why? First of all, you know, population 12.
Let's take a look at this. We'll see where that place is. Olathe.
O L A T H E. I have no idea how many people live there. It could be a lot of people for some reason. But it's just, I don't remember ever seeing that name of a city before or a town. And why don't they offer it to somewhere that's at least reasonably, you know?
It's a good sized town. It has 127,000 people.
Oh.
Who knew?
Wow.
Huh. It's actually a big city. It's 54 square miles. It's a city and a county seat of Johnson County, Kansas.
So now, is that going to be like the new hub of rack networking?
That's where I'd put a shop tomorrow. Look for a warehouse space and get that. Fiber.
Yeah, the only problem you have is maybe the tornadoes and stuff. But yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, so they're going to get this great opportunity of having this high-speed internet. I don't know where else it is. I mean, obviously they're rolling out and testing it. But man, they'll be able to watch movies and download all sorts of porn, and they're going to really just take the town, make it big.
Well, there'll be a lot of shared connections, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. JCPenney is in the news. It was up like 10% yesterday. I love this story because there was some research piece that was out, some analysis that said to the effect that if JCPenney unloaded all these stores that they have that are losing or maybe not bringing in what they're supposed to bring in, and, you know, like a chunk of them, kept the ones that are the high profit margin ones, the ones that really have the traffic, and they actually sold those or leased those to another retailer that could just pretty much, you know, walk in and do a little renovation and then, you know, start selling, that they would make a lot of money and it would be very good for the retailers. So in other words, if you read this between the lines, what they're saying is that if JCPenney provides another retailer this space, they'll actually be able to make a lot of money, but JCPenney can't make money in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. This is makes sense. So I mean, the logic is elusive.
It's kind of like, hey, there's a restaurant going out of business. It's been that spot. It's been kind of unlucky because they just don't have any good restaurants. It's just been out of business four times. I think I'm going to open my restaurant there.
The curious thing is people do that. My wife always likes to point out – she used to be a waitress when she was young. But she always seems to point out what's called the jinxed location. And there'll be spots – and there's a number of them in San Francisco that there's a restaurant there, fails. Mm-hmm. Another restaurant goes in there, fails. Another restaurant goes in, fail. I mean, it's just one restaurant after the other keeps going into the same jinxed location, each one of them thinking, well, the other guy was an incompetent bonehead. I could obviously go in there and make money. And they go in and they fail. It's amazing to watch. So I think this is – the logic here is not completely off the wall because probably some dumb retailer would take the – oh, boy, it's a good spot.
Yeah, it's built already. It's easy. I don't have to worry about a lot of pesky customers coming as we're rebuilding it. You know, I don't have to worry about that. And it's fresh territory because really a lot of people don't visit this place. And when we come, we're going to have a big sign, a big opening, and they're going to come in droves. Yeah, crazy. Crazy. Let's see what else I have on here. I have lots of little things on here. Okay, commodities. You know, it's interesting that oil is still holding up pretty well considering – all things, considering the dollar higher, considering that China is kind of weakening, considering all this oil is in the 92-ish, 3-ish per barrel here. And we've seen a weakening and inventory is really not that strong. So it's a kind of a seasonality issue, I guess, right now.
It's 92.38 as we speak.
Mm-hmm. And it was actually yesterday clipping up to towards 94. And copper's been falling. If you look at copper, it's been really coming down pretty dramatically. Copper has been historically – a commodity that is linked to economic and global growth, because copper is used in all sorts of things.
Right.
You know, and especially in housing. And the wiring and plumbing and all these different things. I mean, maybe some things have taken over, like PVC, and but still, copper is just a big part of manufacturing and general growth. Copper has been falling dramatically, which kind of is interesting because it's usually a signal. The markets usually follow that somehow, at least a little bit afterwards, but it just continues to move down and markets are still holding a bit. So there's a weird thing happening. We have some growth here in the United States in the housing area. We saw the housing doing much better. You know, it's kind of still moving higher. Now we're starting to hear about bubbles already in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and some other areas around the country that they're just, you know, kind of crawling all over each other to buy these condos and bidding them higher, of course. We're seeing the return of zero down payment loans again.
Yeah, an overbid on the house.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, like, I guess we never learn, but that's what's happening. The NAHB came out today. They were much lower than expected. Consumer confidence came out last week, much lower. The University of Michigan, it was supposed to be 78, came out 71. Hmm. And that's not a good sign for retailers, et cetera. It's been holding up for a while, but really just kind of came down really hard this month. Housing permits were better today. The housing starts were a bit lighter. And builders, you know, kind of really lost some of their confidence recently. But yet builder stocks have been just, you know, on a nonstop tear higher.
Hmm.
Now, they're building a lot less, I mean, far fewer homes than they built back in, let's say, 2005, 2006. And many of their stocks are very close to those levels. I mean, if you look at a housing chart over time, new housing starts, that is, or housing completions, you know, it goes from a very high point on the top left to a very low point on the bottom right with a little bitty tick up. Just a little tick up.
Yeah.
So they're building a lot less. They're building it more efficiently, I suppose. They're having a difficult time getting workers, is my understanding. So they are building, but still not at the level they should be. And now many of these big guys are getting into the apartment business, rentals. Massive rental properties that are going to be putting up in a variety of places. I guess that I'm stuck on the fact that I was still unclear that we were short of housing. You know, that was a demand for housing. Is that? Have you heard that?
Well, I haven't heard that, but I do know that there seems to be some thought that everyone wants to live in an apartment, which keeps cropping up in the conversation. People don't want to buy a house. Because it crashed, you know, the market crashed in 2008. So why would you want to buy a house now that they're cheap?
I don't know why you don't want to live in an apartment.
Why would anybody want to live in an apartment?
Although, listen, there are some apartments that are nice. I lived in an apartment one time a number of years ago that, you know, they have the doorman. They have – not New York. It was down here. But they have doorman. They have, like, a little restaurant down there.
In New York, it's pretty common to live in an apartment. But it's New York. It's like a different style of life.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive. I know this because my daughter just got accepted to Columbia grad school.
Oh, so she'll be up there in the ghetto.
Yeah. So we're looking for an apartment or something for her to share or live in. I think it may be cheaper for her to commute.
What, from Florida?
Yeah.
Probably.
It may be. It's ridiculous, the cost. Besides the fact that the grad school is amazingly expensive. I mean, but okay, it's what it is. It's only a one-year program. It's like $50,000-$60,000 for 1 year.
Oh my God.
Is that unbelievable?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's ludicrous, these prices. Yeah. They've decided somewhere along the line, they've decided that looks we can, whether you're public or private, public schools are just as expensive now, that we can gouge the students, make them take student loans, ruin their lives. I mean, this is a great country.
It's a business. You know what's really interesting is that many of the Florida schools, and this happens all over the country, but the Florida schools are accepting – it's harder for a Florida resident – and again, I'm just saying Florida. It can be any state. It's harder for a Florida resident these days to get into a Florida school because the Florida residents pay so much less.
Yeah, no, tuition. You don't want that. You want screw the locals.
Yeah.
If you're a Florida school, you don't want any Floridians. You want to send them off someplace where they have to pay out of state tuition. That's the wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And then students come in from out of state to Florida and they get to pay out of state tuition and everybody's making tons of money. I mean, Berkeley has taken it to the next level where they not only kind of reject local students, but they like out of state. But they like to have out of country because that's even more money. So the school is largely filled with Chinese, Taiwanese, Hong Kong citizens, and people with, you know, a lot of overseas money. And they come flocking in. I think it's half the school is like at least close to 50% of the school are all Asians. Mm. It's just the money. It's a scam. It's unbelievable.
Right. Okay, so it's about, you want to go look at the stocks here?
Yeah, let's take a look.
Let's take a look at the stocks. And again, Dvorak is just chewing it up here.
Yeah, but not on the one I want.
Which is the one that you want? I don't know what's going on. Are you getting enough
Netflix?
On the Google? Oh, yeah. Hold on a second. I'm not getting, well, we're not both in Netflix. Oh, we're both in Netflix.
He already forgot.
Yeah, I'm the short one on Netflix. I forgot about that. I'm up.
Yeah.
And actually, that 179 number is really
looming.
It's looming. It's actually 179, but 176, which again is not too far away. 176 is, you know,
the bottom falls out. Yeah.
Yep. So long. I don't know why the Google spreadsheet's not updating tonight. Do you see that under the percent change? It has a lot of NAs in there.
No, I got none. Mine's updated fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder what's going on.
Oh, no, I see on a percent change thing.
Yeah, something's not updating tonight. Anyway, Live Nation up 20%, right at 20%. And that was just, when was that? Well, that was actually the end of last year. That was very good. Corning up 2.5%. Amazon short up 9.5%. That's been falling pretty well.
Finally.
Corn is only up 3.5%, or almost 4%. Radio Shack up 18%. That's 2%. That's 119 and 118.
Yep.
Just keeping count here. McGraw-Hill's hanging around there. Walmart short. Just can't keep down the big boys these days. Murphy Oil not doing so well. Cree, 18.5%.
Yeah, I'm nailing it.
That's all Dvorak.
All with this basic, all the Dvorak insider. You look at the insiders and I say, what's that guy thinking?
What are they doing?
I have one for today, too.
And you had NuStar Energy up about 1.3%. All right, what's today?
Today is... let's get find it.
While he's finding it, I'll mention that this is only a game that we play.
Yes,
don't
exactly.
think about using any of these recommendations or any of these things as recommendations or using any of these things and considering these are a suggestion or recommendation to buy or sell any security. Consult competent financial advice and do your homework. There is extreme risk in investing in any securities. Thank you.
This is a small company, but one of the insiders keeps buying and buying and buying and buying and buying. Small amounts at a time, but lots of buying. RCM Technologies, symbol is RCMT.
Okay.
And I was actually had my eye on the stock before. I just didn't put it. I didn't pull the string on it. But this is one of these things that it looks like it's going to be I just think it's like the Kelly Girl Company. It's a staffing outsourcing services.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a cheapie. It's a $5 stock, $6 stock, so it could get wiped out pretty quickly.
Well, you know, remember that stock that we talked about some time ago? That Opka Health, OPKO.
Yeah,
it was like let's look at that for a second because I found something out not too long ago, and I was really, I think it was OPKO, Opco Health or something like that. Opco Health. It's at 7. Let's see where it was.
752.
I want to say it was in the 4s when we were looking at it.
Maybe.
I'm looking at it right here. Let's see.
Let's take a look at the...
yeah, it was. It must have been.
Take a look at the long-term chart. 5-year. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Well, it was... Yeah, it was probably around 4. Yeah, and then way back when this year... No, last year. It was last year. It was a 1.
Yeah, it was definitely in the 4s. And this year went from what? 4 to... Or 5 to 8?
Yeah, that's a good move.
That's a pretty good note. Now, here's what I found. I was really kind of interested in this. Now, this guy, Phil somebody, what's his name? Phil Frost, who was the chairman of the board. He was just buying, he probably still is buying boatloads of this thing. I mean, remember he was saying like $1 million a day or something ridiculous?
Yeah, right.
Well, I think also, if I'm not mistaken, just remember that name, Phil Frost, okay? Let me look something up here. Teva Pharmaceuticals, or Teva, I think it was Teva, T-E-V-A. I think this is the one. Look who the chairman of the board of Teva is.
Is it Frost?
Phil Frost. And here's what's also interesting. There's some discussion about, you guessed it, Teva buying Opka.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how
that
it works.
Explains a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Scam.
He actually lives down here. He lives not too far from me.
I'll bet.
Yeah. Yep. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little situation there.
Yeah,
that
was a good catch. Yeah, I wonder what he's going to pay. Probably a lot.
Yeah, I mean, so he, sure, I guess he gets to name his price, right?
Whatever. Yeah, he's the guy on both sides of the deal. That's so great.
Here's a theory.
Does he sit in two chairs and run back and forth? So like a Woody Allen thing?
So here's what I think. This is what's going to happen, okay? When is the buyout going to come, if it's going to come? I think this is a very simple answer. Ready? When he runs out of money that he keeps buying Opco at to push the stock higher and he doesn't have any more ability to buy more shares, they come in and buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why.
So what you would do is you'd run it up so you – because you're going to have to get a premium on the current stock price when you buy it.
Right.
So you want to get it as high as you can.
Right.
So the premium is going to be maybe 20% over the – say it hits 10, so they'll buy it for $12. And then you get all that money.
Yeah, and so what you're doing is he's going out and he's not only liquidating all his accounts probably, this is in theory, but he's also finding out all the places he can borrow money from.
Well, yeah, right? if he knows the deal's coming down, which he should because he's on both sides of the table. Yeah, it's the American way. And somehow legal.
Yeah, somehow. But that, I thought that was really interesting when I found it because I was doing some research today, and
good,
I'm looking back
good
and forth.
Catch, yeah. Let's see.
Anyway, that's all that I have to offer for you this evening. And like I said, we're not going to be here next week.
Well, you didn't talk about your Silica holdings you're going to put in here.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, that's true.
Then we can sign off.
We need something. I needed something that was going to kind of maybe do some kind of movement. Now, Silica is an interesting company. This is I think we had this on the list once before.
I believe I've heard of this company before,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this does – it works in – well, it has a lot of things it does. It does, of course, sand propens and grain silica and ground silica and all these different things. But one of the things it has is it works inside of the oil and gas and the natural gas. So they're making some of the products that are used in the extraction. Okay. They do a lot of different things, filters and all that. But – what I like about this is if you look at a recent chart, which you know has been, I guess it peaked out at about 23.5, 24 or something. Let me just take a look here. 26, recently peaked out at 26. So the company really did pretty well for a while. Year to date, it's up 35%, by the way. And they had a good earnings that came out. You know, and they don't trade that much. Although today they traded 2.5 million shares on average volume, which is usually 1.2 million. The last couple of days have been interesting. Yesterday, when the markets were just getting obliterated, we actually bought a nice piece of that, and then it went up like 6 or 7%. We cut the position and kind of added back to it today when it was down a bit. But what I like about this is the action with markets being kind of soft. So if markets are kind of soft and we're seeing this big amount of money going into it, right? And you're seeing now this kind of dip, the recent dip over the last maybe 2 weeks that recently happened. You know, you're shaking out a lot of investors, and maybe this is kind of a potential point where it turns back and starts moving back the other direction again.
Well, it is a long shot. Okay, well, if you think that's your best bet at hitting the 20%, or
yeah, I could go back to Medbox. Right? Let's see what that is today. It was 26 now. Wait a minute. This is interesting. Maybe, I mean, it still has a shot to go back to 200, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. Everything does.
Yeah, it's really low now. They just acquired a company called MedVend. Their patents, whatever that means.
See, I was watching Charlie Rose, by the way, and the guy who was the ex-CEO, this guy Greenberg, I think is his name, who was the CEO of AIG.
Oh, yeah, Herb Greenberg.
Yeah, Herb Greenberg. Yep. That guy, wow. If you can get to see this interview, it's really funny.
Oh, I've seen his interviews before. He's angry, isn't he?
Oh, is he mad? He says the government stole his money, the government ripped him off, the government this and that. He said all the bull crap that that went on was malarkey, that if AIG went out of business, the economy was going to collapse. He says, that's bull.
Oh, come on. They had a huge, huge, huge sum of CDS exposure. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know. But he said that if the company went broke, it wouldn't have brought down the economy. It would just lost all those CDSs.
But that would be a problem, because if they would have gone broke and there was nobody back in the CDSs during that time, Nobody would take any risk at all. The whole it would have been a big problem.
Well,
big problem.
I'm just telling you what he said. I don't know.
Well, this
he's
is
got a
guy,
book out, by the way. AIG is in it,
and he has a lawsuit also against the government. But you know, this is also a guy whose name that people used to call him is Ace Greenberg. Okay, so I'm just saying,
Ace.
You know, this is like a kind of a CEO.
He looks like a guy who is a mean CEO.
He's kind of squished, isn't he? A little bit. He's like.
Looks like he just wants to kill somebody. Well, he's like 82 or 85 or something. He's really old.
He's going to go to his grave with this whole thing that they stole all this money. But you know, let's look what he's worth anyway. Okay, Herb Ace Greenberg. We'll call up Ace Green. It's not Green. It's Green.
No, he said
Ace Greenberg.
He said he lost 90% of his net worth. Lost.
Really?
That's what he said. So whatever his net worth is now is probably. I'm sure it has a comfortable life.
Where is this? Ace Greenberg, former Bear and CEO. Charlie Rose, the conversation with Ace Greenberg. Oh, that was from 2008. He was still pissed back then. It could have been a replay. Is it Hank Greenberg?
No,
is that what it is?
It was mostly about Henry. I think it was Hank.
Yeah, Hank Greenberg.
No, I think it was newer because it is all about the lawsuit. I think the lawsuit's not... 2008 lawsuit.
Lost 90%. So he only has like $300 million worth of. Let's see. No, that's not it. That's a different guy. Here. He lost 90% of his money. Ace Greenberg. Okay. Hank Greenberg. He's suing the government for $25 billion. Well, what's his net worth, for goodness sakes? Come on. I want to know.
Forbes should have it. Or have a close approximation.
Hank Greenberg net worth. Yes. Here, Forbes. Oh, come on. Is that right? That's right, I guess. I hate Forbes. You got to always click continue to cite and all that. $3.2 billion.
And he lost 90%. What, he had $20 billion then?
You feeling bad? I mean, seriously. $3.2 billion. When was this done?
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Hank lost 95% of his net worth of $3 billion.
Yeah, that's correct.
So he's only got $150
million. All right. So you know what? First of all, he wasn't diversified. The first rule of thumb is be diversified.
Yeah, I guess he had all his eggs in one AIG basket.
Second of all, he was stupid because if he didn't see what was going on with the stock – and pull out some time and sell a few things, well, that's his fault. The third thing is that if he didn't sell and authorize all the CDS exposure, it wouldn't have been this big problem.
Here is the irony. Hank Greenberg, the baseball player, has a net worth of $300 million.
Yeah. Well, he didn't invest in AIG, obviously. Okay? I mean, I'm just saying. He's a self-made... 3.2. He's now in his fourth decade. New York Law School, Doctor of Jurisprudence, University of Miami, Bachelor of Arts, married, four children. I'm not feeling so bad for the guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I don't feel bad for him. I just think it's funny to watch this guy. He's so mad. But now I see that the Hank Greenberg, the home run hitter, I didn't know he was worth that much. I should have got his autograph. He used to be, I think he was a broadcaster here in San Francisco for a while.
And on top of that, just to remind everybody, on this game that we play, I'm short AIG.
Oh, you're still short? Is that still on there?
Yep. Yeah, it is. Up 2%. We'll take it.
I don't even see. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Yeah, you're up.
Yep. So there you have it, Hank. And you know what? If you were smart, you would have put puts. You would have been short. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, right. I agree. Okay, I'm sorry I brought it up.
You know what? I'm now as angry as he is.
That's not possible.
No, he's angry. I mean, every time you see him, he's just, you know, and
I'm surprised he's still alive and hasn't just given himself a heart attack just by being so mad.
We're talking about, like, you know, what happens with Bernanke when he opens his mouth and all that. I mean, he's spitting mad. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
he's
that's what I said about the spit. He can't get this. He needs to drink more water.
No, I'm talking about Hank Greenberg.
Oh, Greenberg. Yeah, but he doesn't have that thick saliva, it seems to me.
So maybe, Bernanke, we should say that, you know, if he does drink some water, if he does that, then it's going to be sound like he's nervous, and that means that there's a problem with the economy and the stock market tanks. You can't win.
You can't do anything. He has to walk out like a robot, say a few dumb things, and leave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we're not going to say any more dumb things here. So we'll 2 weeks. We'll be back after your little trip to
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
I'm going to be rappelling down a volcano.
Give us a report. Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hopefully you don't hurt yourself.
I hope not. All right. I'll see you next time.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.